Welcome to Podcast on Fire, yet another Podcast on Fire with the added subtitle, added tinge of Tom on Fire, the beloved Tom on Fire. But what the episode will be numbered, which number you will get, we don't know yet, and what kind of Tom on Fire, aka what title will come after that, we don't know yet. It's based on the convo that is about to happen. And that's how I like to structure these things. So for instance, the last Tom on Fire was Tom on Fire, aka Handover to Blue, because we talked about the 97 Handover and Blu-rays. So.
I like your work there.
You know,
slick.
You know, Twain would have been jealous, you know what I mean? Whenever we've done these Tom on Fires, which is by now two, but it's not only two, not at all only two, it's a marvelous thing. I've liked the response, and we've in silly ways we dubbed it Tom on Fire, but why not keep it? Keep that flag high, because I think it's suitable, and it's when Tom KW has. When he brings some topics in that he's keen on, that he's angry about, or whatever. I'm going to burst into flames. That's how angry I am. But anyway, I will let him take it away and moderate our discussion, and let's see where that gets us. Usually we chat well, you and I, and I'm sure it will be that way this time around as well. And my name is Kennedy, if you didn't know, and Tom KW is there snickering in the background and ready to roll.
As always, yes. Sitting on top of my heater, full blast, completely nude, with matches in one hand, some petrol in another, and I'm also getting the rocket prepared, course the sun. So just have that image in your mind, let that soak in. While we bring you the topics for your ears.
It will be that fantastic to that regard that you will, shoot off, if you will.
Yes, I'm going to shoot off during this episode, Ken.
Thanks, everybody. It's been a good podcast. Bye! There he goes again. But he will be back. Anyway, this is Podcast on Fire on a Sunday at the time of recording. The atmosphere is very Sunday-y. For some reason. Chill out, I would say so. This is Podcast on Fire on the Podcast on Fire network, and the website that you can check out all days of the week is podcastonfire.com. Email for feedback, there will be Stu that receives those emails first, so be nice to him. podcastonfire@googlemail.com. We do extra content on this network. We call them bonus episodes, and they are on the website. You can there will be a button called bonus episodes, but there is a category if you scroll down that is called bonus episodes. Whenever we do exclusive content to elongate whatever coverage we're doing, and that started out as members only archive on the old forum that is now closed. Close for new registration, but you can still go to podcastonfire.com/forum if you're one of the members that registered once upon a time. The archive on the forum, I'm planning to bring to the website in some shape or form, the bonus stuff, or like the bigger bonus stuff, if you will, the meteor bonus stuff, and do something with it on the website, because the forum is no longer in use, and there is some good material on there, so stay tuned for that, and any updates on that will probably be on Facebook, either of these two endeavors. We have our page, facebook.com/PUF network. Click and like our page, leave some feedback if you like the show and what have you. But if you follow the link in the info box, in the about box, you can reach the discussion group that contains most of the network updates and general chat and what have you. Or you can just type in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search bar, and that will get you the discussion group. You have to be approved to get in, but that is not a long process. So don't worry about it. You'll be in instantly and can join the fun and the filth and what have you.
If you're a hottie or a naughty, you'll be in.
Is this the top Sunday Tom who is all creative, I was about to say? Are the juices flowing a lot more on Sundays?
The juices are flowing, yeah. Mm. This is the I'm recording live from the Love Shack in Birmingham. There are no Love Shacks in Birmingham.
Hey, ish. You know, ish. Love Shack ish. It's a shed.
It's a shed, basically, in a back garden. It's fairly cold.
And follow us and all that nonsense on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. I do writing of Taiwanese movies, category-free movies, IFD, Filmark, Cut and Paste Productions, and occasionally horror movies on sogoodreviews.com, and I do video reviews of such on @sleazykvideo.com. So check that out if you like. If you like reading, there's reading to be done, and if you like just watching a little bite-sized video review, spoken video reviews, if you will, with my commentary on top of it, that is available for you also. So I think I'm playing to different audiences. Shit, even I don't like to read my own reviews sometimes. I'm just, hey, sleazykvideo.com it is. And I am on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. We are on iTunes and Podcast on Fire Network. Has all the shows are on there, but not all shows are in a separate feed. Almost all are. So we're almost done with that. Podcast on Fire has its own feed. So if you like to subscribe to the show, go to iTunes and search Podcast on Fire Network and add whatever shows you like, including Podcast on Fire. And if you like any of the shows, we would very much appreciate a rating, or if you would be so kind, a comment about what you liked, what you didn't like, what was right, what was wrong, why is Ken on all the time, that kind of thing. You know, I can take it, I'm a big boy.
Too much Ken.
And I'm saying that, I can take it, I'm a big boy, and then the first like mild comment comes in, I don't really like Ken that much. Oh my god, everybody hates me. You know. We are also on the stream. We are being streamed on Stitcher. So if you follow the link in the show post, you will get the link to our show page on Stitcher.com. But I would recommend, if you have an iPhone or an iPad or an Android smartphone, to download a free application that from Stitcher. Just type in Stitcher in at your nearest app store, and once you're in Stitcher, you can type in Podcast on Fire Network, and that will give you the option to add each individual show. Speaking of show, vcinemashow.com, Tom KW is active over there. Is there anything to say, anything new or in general?
I'm Tom. When I'm not pumping hard in the gym or taking long walks on the beach, I write for vcinemashow.com.
Sexy.
Signing off. Wish you were here.
It's like I think I have like a pre-recorded Tom here for some reason. That you just press play and they give me the appropriate response to my nonsense.
Just catchphrases.
You know, hi Tom, how are you doing? Ken, not now.
Oh. Hello, Ken.
Hi Tom.
Using the voice the voice player on the computer. Yeah. Hello, Ken. How are you? Did Ooh. You watch some films lately?
I like this Tom a lot better.
He's completely devoid of any personality at all. I like yes. him a lot better.
You're at my level now. You know what I mean? Anyway, what did Tom do last in terms of watching movies? Tell us now, Tom.
Ben, I watched...
Stop it. Be serious about it now.
Stop it now. Come on, yeah. It's getting stupid. I watched The Raid.
Ah, The Raid Redemption, even.
Raid, oh yeah, The Raid Redemption.
I'm not slagging it off here. I'm just saying, like, it's The Raid Redemption throughout most of the world, I guess.
Yes. And, I mean, I was going to see the cinema. Previous film, Gareth Evans' previous film, Marantau, I was... You know, I liked it. I felt like there's a lot that can be improved. I felt it was a really good start.
I think that was his first movie, though, so, you know.
Yeah, it was really good, you know, kind of, it got his foot in the door of kind of what he was trying to do, and I was looking forward to this. I was obviously quite sceptical because of, you know, the previous film, and I had problems with it, but I was going to see it in cinema. It went out of cinema really quickly, and I just kind of just forgot about it until the other day, and thought, you know, I need to sit down, I need to see it, you know, this proposed kind of... A lot of hype on it, a lot of, you know, the second coming of action cinema, and it's not that, it's...
Has it really been called the second coming of action cinema?
I mean, it's been praised at that level, and, you know, the best action film in decades, the best, you know, things of that kind of level were a lot of, you know, critical, and it's just been getting love all over, and I mean, it's basically, you know, it's a bubblegum live-action video game. And I don't feel it's the second coming of action cinema. It's just a fun, slick movie. Just simple and plain. I mean, it's got exactly the same problems I had with Marantau. which I don't think Iko Uwe or is a skilled enough screen fighter. He might be a great fighter and he might be a really talented fighter, but I think he's a skilled enough screen fighter or the way that he's shot. I don't think he has enough charisma to lead the film in both acting stakes and both and action stakes also.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like exact same problems I had with Manitar, that the choreography just lacks rhythm and power. And although there's some nice kind of brutal moments and some quite inventive moments here and there, let's just say a fridge gets exploded and causes a lot of havoc, it feels very stop and start, and it's, you know, nothing particularly inventive in the grand schemes of the choreography. I was entertained. I sat there, I was insane. There was not a moment where I said, I need to turn this off, so I'm not enjoying it. It kept me insane the whole thing, but, you know, simple story. And the action just felt, you know, just very simple, nothing groundbreaking.
Do you think you were kind of damaged by the fact that the hype has been verbalized, like you just said, that there, you know, do you think you as a viewer, although you're saying to yourself, I can't be affected by other views, do you think you're kind of subconsciously affected and therefore the bar, it's impossible not to expect the bar to be high?
But possibly, I mean, that is a possibility, but I think with me that I had the kind of the factor of seeing his previous film beforehand and reviewing it and really kind of trying to soak it through and really kind of just think about it and, you know, really kind of to the core of why, you know, the problems I have with it. And I think I had that kind of in my head going in. I was thinking, you know, I think those problems aren't majorly big in the previous film. I think you can maybe improve on them with this. You know, and it's not, I think it's a more ambitious film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it helps kind of staying simple and staying within the realms of the building, like the kind of block of the flower, the block of flats that the SWAT team go into.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice template as well for kind of action to take place. But I felt it just exactly the same, that it didn't feel like I was involved with the film at all. It was just nice to look at. It was nice to watch. I didn't feel myself kind of, and I'm not looking for a kind of, you know, the second coming of action cinema. I'm looking for an entertaining action film that I feel I could be a part of, that I can really kind of love. And I didn't feel like that. I didn't feel any love towards the film. I felt that it was good for what it was. But still the same problems. I mean, I'd be interested to see if the director could work with another lead, or what he could do with another lead and maybe another kind of action team. I'd be interested to see that. But I think if his next film is more of this, I'll probably give it a miss. Because both times it's failed to really keep me kind of... failed to kind of surprise me on both counts, to be honest. The music's really good, though. By the fella out of Linkin Park.
Shinoba, Mike something?
Mike Shinoda, yeah. Mike Shinoda.
Is that the Asian guy who essentially is the DJ in all the videos? Is that the guy from Linkin Park?
He's the rapper.
Gotcha.
I think it was his first film score as well, looking a bit behind the scenes of the DVD, and I think it was his first film score as well, and he does a really good job, just really kind of... I didn't care for the vocal songs, but I think it was very atmospheric, very, very kind of atmospheric electronic score without being very over there, really nice. But yeah, other than that, I can recommend it to people, but definitely set the bar low if you're a fan of this type of cinema. That'd be my only recommendation for it.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it eventually. There's few movies where I rush out, you know, I gotta watch it as soon as it hits cinema demand, DVD Blue. This is one of them. I mean, I'm focused on so many other stuff that I... But it's impossible not to know of The Raid. And kind of be pleased about its reception and its... that it's given a chance to be received, you know what I mean? Because it's not... It's been given fairly big cinema runs some places, but it's very known and an underground movie that was released, you know, here and there in Asia on DVD wouldn't have had this impact. So I'm kind of glad that a subtitled movie, you know, makes an impact, whether it's, you know, reference material or not. I don't really care. I'm glad that it's getting a chance to be exposed.
Agreed. Exactly the same as I felt with his previous film, that it's good to see this type of cinema just still being made, even
subtitled as well. I know action is universal and there, but I'm glad that it's still, as far as I know, anyway, I haven't heard anything to the contrary, that it's mostly getting subtitled screenings and runs.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. I think subtitled with the soundtrack by Mike Shinoda. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it's playing the most. It had an original soundtrack, but I think that's the kind of that's the way it's playing now, subtitled, but with the new soundtrack.
And no complaints whatsoever, as far as I can say. As far as I know, I'm betting a lot of people would scoff at the fact that the guy from Linkin Park, because we don't like Linkin Park here, but
he's a talented dude.
Mean to do, and no one, when they heard it, really complained, because it was not a Linkin Park soundtrack, it was him on his own, kind of.
He's a talented dude. He was saying before on the thing, he's done numerous kind of remixes, and he's done side projects and stuff. He's not just Linkin Park, the guy you see out of Linkin Park. So if you don't like Linkin Park, don't see that as kind of a reason not to kind of enjoy the score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll probably someday catch it on a streaming service, I would guess. But it's not on my radar. But that's not a diss. It's just, it's hard for me to be excited about a lot of stuff nowadays, because I'm so focused on what I do creatively. That excites me. It's very hard to share the focus, you know what I mean? I'm very glad for its success and for Gareth Evans. And I'm hoping that there will be a development rather than a string of the same. I'm not saying Maritime Raid are bad, because I haven't seen them, but I always like it when there is development and there is desire to take it new directions, because it kind of will grow tiring after a while to adhere to the same recipe. I mean, look at us with the podcast, even though it has changed, focus and style and intent. So
yes.
So I definitely support that. It'll be fine. I'm pretty certain, to be really honest, that I will come out with it thinking, yeah, that was pretty fun. Nothing like groundbreaking, or nothing that I will, scream about or anything, but that's fine. I'm guessing a little bit might have to do with the fact that we as Asian cinema audience have seen it all, and there's not a lot of stuff that is new to us, but for a new audience who haven't seen all of this frequently, it can serve a purpose due to that.
Yeah, I'm happy for the director. I'm happy for the cinema being accepted, the type of cinema being accepted for the way it is, in this kind of day and age. And I'm very interested to see what he does next, hoping that he'll kind of get maybe a new creative team on board and be able to work wonders with that.
Right on. Anything else you want to mention, Tommy?
Nope, that's it, mate. That's the major one.
Okay. I have three brief mentions. And we are skipping, by the way, network updates for now on this show, because I follow a Facebook group for most of the network updates. So that's why we're doing Last Movies Watched instantly, if you will. And lately for me, Netflix got started over here a few weeks ago. So it's been... it's been good and bad for me, I guess. I've been stuck watching a whole lot of Netflix, but I'm pretty pleased, because I don't watch TV. I hate watching TV. I'm annoyed by the fact that I have to endure just to watch 5 minutes of it. Just makes me angry. It's absolutely terrible. I'm so annoyed. It's just crap. That's why having stuff on demand is much better for me, because it is there when I want it. It gives me a chance to try a whole lot of stuff without annoyance in between. I've gone through series, left and right. Aside from movies, watched all of Arrested Development in like 1-2 weeks. Watched Spaced for the first time. Watched just finished The In Between Us, the first the three series of The In Between Us. Thank God for subtitles for that one, because I have a fairly good grasp of English, but they are using a whole lot of slang that I would be lost quite quickly.
Should have just watched the US remake.
It was fun. I watched the trailer for that and it was like, are they really doing a shot for shot it seems like they are shooting the exact same episode with him painting the driveway with the I Love Carly and blah blah blah. It was really, are you not even attempting to do something of your own? It's literally a remake.
The US office, it ain't.
Wow. Yeah, it look kind of crap, and I'm looking forward to the movie. I don't think it's out yet on DVD or Blu-ray, the in-betweeners movie, but I'm certainly looking forward to that.
It is in the UK.
All right. Yeah, I suppose. It's been a few months, so I'm looking forward to that, and it should be fun. Were you a fan of The In-Betweeners when it aired?
Yeah, I loved it, man. I absolutely loved it. I loved it. There's a show called Skins. Have you heard of Skins?
Nope.
That was basically kind of on the same channel, which was kind of a stab at teenage life. But it was very kind of, you know, fantastical and very kind of dream, a teenage dream of what their life probably wasn't, which they could be. Then The In-Betweeners came along, and it's just exactly what kind of, I think, being a British kind of teenager is. That kind of that awkwardness and just that, just that.
I was glad it was so raw and shit.
Raw, man, yeah, just raw and kind of real. I remember it coming along. Yeah, me and my friends. Loved it. Loved it and just bought into it completely. And I think it was really refreshing to see something that's kind of raw and kind of raunchy, like on TV.
Yeah. Certainly not on BBC. This.
Really. No. But the movie,
I mean, I know BBC can allow a shit or two. Yeah. But I mean, I've seen the young ones at bottom over the years, but you realize that they were working with restraints. But here it was, holy
no,
cow!
No clunges on the BBC. Unfortunately, but yeah,
that was a new word for me. I gotta tell you, I've not heard that before.
Nice, you're learning as well.
Absolutely, but yeah, it was good fun, and started the League. This US comedy about. It's a sitcom about guys playing fantasy football, but it's really funny. John Lajoie, the Canadian guy who got famous doing YouTube videos with he's in it. He's crazy.
Large role in it.
He's one of the guys. So he's the dumb one who doesn't really. He's pretty dumb, but he gets all the chicks. And there is some songs in there as well from him. There is an episode where one of the wives says, "I have great confidence in my pussy." And someone says she has vaginal hubris. And then cut to John doing a rap about that, which is exclusive to the League. Sorry?
As MC Vagina?
No, it was as Everyday Normal Guy, actually.
Oh, no.
So
nice.
So it's good fun. Anyway, what I wanted to move on to, what I watched on Netflix, are three Asian-tinged things here. First of all, a documentary. This I'm probably the last one who saw this. Not Quite Hollywood, The Wild Untold Story of Osploitation.
Nice.
That was fun. Really fast and moving fast-moving documentary about the Australian film industry, specifically exploitation movies. The sex movies, the sex comedies, and the horror movies, and the gore, and the nutty stunt movies. Razorback, all the Mad Max movies, and of course The Man from Hong Kong.
Yep.
And this was the part I was looking forward to, because I knew they were gonna trash Jimmy Wang Yu.
Jimmy.
I'm pretty sure all of it was true, that Jimmy was a complete ass, and had an attitude problem like you read about. The thing is, The Man from Hong Kong is awesome, despite. But I'm pretty sure that he was exactly the way they described him, pretty much racist, and they thought he was the director, essentially.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, very revealing.
And got to kick the shit out of Brian Trenchard the Smith in the movie, essentially.
Yeah.
Great documentary. I loved it. Made me want to see a whole lot of Australian movies. Because, what was it? That Stacey Keach, Jamie Lee Curtis road movie, Death something, that was shot in Australia. Looked great. And a whole lot of nutty stunt movies in there.
Good film recommendations from that. Yeah, first time I saw it as well.
Absolutely. So I'm looking forward to finding some stuff there. So that I loved.
Road games.
That was it. Brilliant, actually. I like the look of that, and looked gorgeous as well, and all of that. So I recommend Not Quite Hollywood: The Wild Untold Story of Exploitation. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray probably, and on Netflix. So go check it out if it's on your Netflix. Also watch Inseparable. This is a mainland China movie starring Daniel Wu and Kevin Spacey. It's set in mainland China. It may be a pure production, not a co-production, despite a Western cast, such as Spacey, but Peter Stormare is in it as well, briefly. It's a movie, if you look at the poster and images, it looks like another kick-ass super movie, you know, because Daniel Wu and Kevin Spacey at one point do dress in superhero costumes and go out and fight crime. But I won't say too much, because it ultimately this is a drama. And it has some twists 34 minutes in where you realize it's not going down the expected route. So I'll leave it at that. But Spacey has a lot of fun as the neighbor Chuck. I always like Kevin Spacey's when he's the wise ass. You know what I mean? And Daniel Wu is fine in the lead, but I always like Daniel Wu, but I think he's a better non-verbal actor than a verbal actor, to be really honest.
True, yeah, I love him too, but yeah.
Obviously, English is his first language, or a shared language with Chinese, his American Chinese. But you know what? He's not there yet. He's a better non-verbal actor, and it's true in this movie. He's really good when, I know it sounds mean, but he's really good when not speaking.
He's a very good facial and kind of presence. Very good physical actor. But yeah, I'd say when it comes to dialogue, he's still a bit awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the guy as well, and I think he's it's always good to see him pop up stuff. And he's controversial as well. I do that with, you know, with finger quotes. He does do roles and do things that are maybe kind of out of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And they play kind of roles in films as well, which are kind of a bit kind of left field, which I like as well.
The only thing I can say about this, the kind of frame, the main plot that isn't a twist, is that at the beginning of the movie he tries to kill himself, but his neighbor, which is the Spacey character, knocks on his door and essentially stops him and then gives him, you know, a second chance at life, essentially. But that's still not what it's really about. It turns dramatic, and it's by the end I thought it was really touching. So go watch Inseparable if you're interested in that mix of Daniel Wu and Kevin Spacey in the movie, and they were fun together and good together, and all of that. And finally, a Korean movie. What's Korean cinema?
What?
You know what? After having watched Welcome to Dongmakgol and Cast Away on the Moon, I became an instant fan of the actor Jong Jae Jong, who played the North Korean general in Welcome to Dongmakgol and is the castaway in Cast Away on the Moon.
Yep.
He's a fantastic actor, and Rufus on one of those shows recommended a movie called Going by the Book, which is a 2007 Korean comedy. And, you know, talking first, Jong, he's one of the few actors for me that I'm glad when you find one of these actors that you start to instantly admire, in terms of you instantly get that there's a great skill here, there's a work ethic there, there is a charisma and presence there. And after a while you realize, I can probably watch anything this actor is in, just to get a sense of that again, even crap movies. And even with great actors, you don't get that sense and feeling at all times, you know what I mean, that I want to go out and watch everything. So he's become very special to me especially after Cast Away on the Moon, which is a fantastic and touching movie, and he's great fun, and he's very method, it seems. He can throw himself into roles and have no problems with, you know, shoving his head into the sand literally in Cast Away on the Moon, and just, you know, not playing it, you know, safe. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But what going on going by the book is he plays a super effective by the books cop here. You know, if there is an illegal left turn done by somebody, even his future superior, he will give that person a ticket, because why shouldn't I? He made a wrong left turn. You know, he's very by the book. What he's asked to do is, during a training mission, the police sets up a training mission where they're going to stage a robbery of a bank, and he's asked to play the robber during that training mission. And because he's such a great cop, he's a really great robber as well. So he takes on that role, and then some. It doesn't turn dark, but it's like he is devoted to that role, and that is, it's very funny. The comedy is very kind of dry and deadpan. And here's the shocker. Have a guess, Tom. You know, by saying shocker, you can probably guess more easily. How long do you think this movie is? It's a shocking amount of minutes.
Okay, hold on. Okay.
Shocking amount of minutes.
Exactly 2 hours.
No. Oh, you're so off. 103 minutes.
What the shit?
I know. It's a movie essentially set in like 2-3 locations, but I know that Korean cinema could have squeezed at least 150 minutes out of that.
Of course.
So, you know, go and buy the book. It's a masterpiece based on that already, but it is a very fun movie. It's on Netflix as well. It's on the US Netflix in this case, and without revealing anything, yes, I can access US Netflix as well. It's not illegal. I'm paying for the service, but... It's not on the Swedish Netflix. CG Entertainment has a deal with Netflix, so a lot of their movies are on the US Netflix, and in good quality too, HD quality and all of that. So it's not shoddy video transfers or anything.
He's a great actor, and he's also great in even films that I didn't like. I'll always remember him.
Paul and Rufus always say that they always come away thinking he was great, even though
he was the great. Yeah, Guns and Talks and No Blood No Tears are two main highlights for me. The only thing I remember from those films is probably his performance. The rest is just kind of like, it's just not memorable at all.
Hmm. Have you seen Castaway on the Moon and Welcome to Dogmaco?
Not yet. I've seen Welcome to Dogmaco, but I haven't seen Castaway on the Moon. I do remember wanting to see it a lot after your coverage, Ken.
Yeah, it's very good.
Enticing bastard.
Yes. it's very good, and it's a very creative Korean, pleasant, and even deep comedy. You know, it's challenging, but you're on board throughout. And he's very funny, yes. And ugly it up as well, you know what I mean? Because in Welcome to Dogmaco, he looks fairly, you know, handsome. He's a war comedy drama kind of thing, but he looks handsome. Castaway on the Moon, he's completely ugly it up, but not in a kind of forced way where they put some makeup on him. No, he's it seems like he grew his actual hair that long and didn't cut his hair for a while. And going by the book, he is completely, you know, there's not a fault with him, you know, that look, you know what I mean? Because he is such a good cop. So I like it, and I recommend it wholeheartedly. I'm sure the Korean cinema community have talked about this movie to death, but in case they haven't, go watch Go and Buy the Book. This was really, really fun, and it's only 100 minutes of your life, so there's motivation and recommendation.
Nice.
Anyway, that was my three picks for Last Movies Watch, so that's a first decent year and a half of discussion, but we will continue to discuss rather than review movies in the second half, as Tom takes it away before he takes away during our Tom on Fire segment. So sit tight, everybody. Listen to some wonderful elevating music, if you will, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, and this is the second half of the show, which is a return to the Tom on Fire segment, which means essentially that Tom has gathered some topics for us to dive into and chat about. So, and I always enjoy having a chat about whatever Tom brings to the table. It's been a success in the past in terms of a listenable podcast. Certainly, we got some good feedback as well. So, take it away, Tom. What's on your mind this time? What are you angry about this week?
I'm angry about fucking postmen. Smash your parcels. Don't they have any more patience?
Okay. It sounds like that stupid bottom dialogue from Bottom, literally the Rick Mayall, Aid Edmondson TV series where he walks in with a parcel. Who was it? It was the fucking postman. Every day he comes around. He claims he's supposed to be delivering the mail. Really? So, who are the recipient of that? Those packages, that mail, us. And then they stop. Then they go quiet. Right. Well, let's not fuck with him anymore. Then. All righty. What's going on, Tom? What do you want to talk about?
Let's do this. We just give the people what they want, Ken. All right. This is how we play the game on Tom on Fire.
I'm scared now.
So, you what?
I'm scared now.
Okay. No, nothing too big. We're just going to discuss, you know, how as we've got older and our taste for cinema.
Who are you calling on? Fuck you!
Hey! Hey now. Fuck him.
It's Sunday, I'm on edge.
Yeah, just as we've got older and our kind of taste for cinema in general have changed, you know, has this changed the way we approach, you know, Asian cinema, the way we kind of make our, you know, purchases, or the way we kind of seek out certain films, or, you know, has it changed in the years that we've been kind of, you know, entwined within the kind of, was a genre, but like the whole kind of Asian cinema landscape. Mm-hmm. I just thought it'd be just discussion on kind of, you know, somewhat nostalgic discussion. We do love nostalgia on Podcasts on Fire, and just kind of thinking about myself personally, just thinking really kind of how, you know, how is it different now, and it's really just, I think, a taste refine, and possibly whilst at one point we were probably quick to sample everything and anything while it's kind of new and fresh and exciting to us in any genre, you know, we maybe know now specifically kind of where our tastes lie exactly. Mm-hmm. And we kind of journey through and sample those more than anything, and less often make the leap to kind of watch something we possibly think we may dislike. When before, when we first get into it, we just kind of eat up everything. Mm-hmm. When now it's more kind of pick and choose, as in maybe I'll watch 2, 3, maybe 4 of a specific genre or an era, and, you know, just kind of turn around and say, you know, that's not for me. That's mm-hmm. not to say one day I'll see something in that genre that I won't love, but for now there's other things for me to kind of see elsewhere.
Yeah, I totally recognize what you're saying. Actually, it's very similar to me, although I've been... when I'm saying I've been at it longer than you, that doesn't really mean anything, because I actually had a pause in my Asian cinema fandom for a number of years, like started mid-90s for like 2 or 3 years, and then had a pause for a good 4 or 5 years. So, you know. But I totally recognize it... And your question, you know, have we changed in our way how we approach, say, Asian cinema, what have you? Now, hell yes. I mean, think of this. I actually was more open to certain movies' depth and even art house 8-10 years back, while still enjoying the genre. I don't know.
She's spam my tea.
but I still enjoyed the genre filmmaking that I enjoy nowadays, regardless. But nowadays, I think it's a mix of different reasons that I've changed. You know, shifting, becoming a, so to say, creative person with my writing and the podcasting and what have you. Per definition, I'm doing something creative. I'm creating something. I'm growing older, and I'm also growing dumber.
Yes, it happens.
You know what? I literally think I am getting dumber because I remember a specific example. We did a commentary for Nobody's Hero earlier this year.
Yeah, we did. And
I watched a bunch of movies beforehand with one of the actors who was in that, the lead actor, Liu Ahong. And one of the movies was this immigrant drama that I've written a review of, like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, like 2 paragraphs and what have you. Watched it early this year. I couldn't understand one thing. I couldn't extract anything anymore. And I was looking at my review and just had a question mark all over myself and my being, like, who wrote that? You know what I mean? You've changed in that regard. You can change in that regard as well. That you're not you're not open to certain genres, I guess, but it's not due to, you know, I do kid about my dislike for Art House and Shunking Express and what have you. I don't like that movie particularly, but I know also that I was probably more, I could approach it more easily 18 years ago and got something more out of it. And now I'm so focused on a whole lot of other stuff that makes me happy that you make that decision, or that you can't focus on everything, and you know for a fact that not all things, like you said, appeal to you. You've given it enough of a chance, but you know, I'm growing older and getting deeper into a fandom that, let's see here, I think, although I will change, and my focus will change, I will appreciate new things. I think nowadays is, I've found more of a closer thing to a definite focus than, let's say, when I first started writing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
With the Taiwanese stuff with me, and with the Category 3 stuff, and the IFD of Filmark, cut and paste stuff, you know, it's where I'd like to be, even though I do watch a whole lot of different stuff, but far from, as you also said, you know, the very newest stuff nowadays. So, you know, I've cut so much out due to time and no real desire. Actually, that two key things there: time, but no real desire to watch as much as I used to do and write about as much as I used to do.
Yeah, we stay in our comfort zone. We like kind of being happy. Like, we kind of like to kind of, you know, we've said it before, like, if we love a certain kind of genre or something, we're willing to watch shit within that genre just because it's that kind of era, mm-hmm. or that certain genre that we enjoy kind of being in. I think, yeah, I mean, as we get older, obviously time plays a massive factor in it, and having an amount of time, whether it be, you know, work or creative endeavors, taken away from that. And when you sit down, like, maybe you're going to get in two films a week or something, like, however you get in, are you going to take a chance on something you think you possibly might not like, or have a good, you know, a good kind of inkling that you're not going to like it, or are you going to watch something that is in, you know, a genre that you love or an era that you love? And it's tough sometimes to kind of get out of that. And sometimes for me, it takes watching films with other people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes kind of, you know, me sitting down, you know, with a loved one, or, you know, and them, and kind of sampling something else. I don't think I would ever watch Bridesmaids if I didn't sit down with mom and watch it. Do you know what I mean?
As long as you feel that tiny strain, then you are likely to avoid checking out a movie.
Anything.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're likely to avoid things that you're not interested in. I think it's just, it's part of getting older. And I do want to clarify that it's not just, if an art house film came along that I loved, I'm not going to not love it because it's art house.
No, I'm not that judgmental either.
No, in terms of certain, yeah, just in terms of certain kind of genres, it's not that I just haven't seen anything yet. That's my kind of stance in it. Not that, oh, fuck that genre, or, you know, fuck art house or whatever. It's mostly, there's been nothing in that yet to really turn me on to that genre. That's it. But it's just getting older and just getting more experience and seeing more. But you tend to have, for me, you tend to have less misses than hits now as you get older, because you kind of know what you're expecting. Because when initially you just try to soak it all in, whether or not you like it, because you really have no yardstick yet at that point. Now you kind of have something to judge from. You're at a kind of a higher plateau now. Mm-hmm. And you tend to kind of have, for me personally, I tend to see more films that I like just because I've read about them, or I know about them, and I know what I'm kind of getting in for. And I tried to challenge myself. I mean, last year, I think, viewing of, you know, something like Red to Kill was something that I probably wouldn't have seeked out on my own. I'd have watched it maybe if it jumped on my lap like it did, given the opportunity through, you know, our commentary, or your guys' commentary back then. I was able to sit down with it for the first time. So really, I feel it's about, you know, it's confidence in yourself and your taste as you get older, and less to the side of just kind of jumping in head first.
Like, I mean,
we know what we like as we get older.
Oh yeah, and you know what? It comes also down to this, that you have to seek out the excitement of being a fan of cinema. You know what I mean? You have to seek out that feeling, and it's not that hard to seek out the So changed focus means that you're still kind of on that ongoing journey of finding exciting cinema, even though you are watching less of it. You know what I mean? You're still kind of developing. I'm a big fan of Italian horror cinema and the Cannibal movies and Lucio Fulci. That's not been a lifelong thing for me. I mean, it's only like probably in the last 10 years or so that I've mustered up the bravery to go down the route of exploitation, you know, Hong Kong exploitation or Italian movies. You know, watching a movie like Dr. Lamb was a big tester for me to see if I could take it. And yes. it's a big tester. Same director as of Red to Kill. Red to Kill is a big tester, you know, and it's not easy to watch. It's not like, that was nothing. Shit, no. It was, whoa. But I've liked the experience of testing myself even further, you know, watching Cannibal Holocaust for the first time last year. Talk about, you know, essentially watching a Mondo film, a snuff film, essentially. And that excites me that era excites me. Yes, 70s yes. and 80s and even 90s to an extent of cult movies, horror movies. An era that appeals to you, you kind of want to explore more. And it turns out for Italian movies, there is a lot to explore, from horror to giallo and what have you. For Hong Kong movies, you know, there is a lot to explore in the 90s category 3 canon. For Taiwanese movies, there is not a lot, but a fair amount to explore with the 70s and 80s social realism and female revenge movies. So it's, you know, I'm leaving behind probably something I did, like you described, trying out most everything, just buying DVDs in bulk when they were very cheap, way before Blu-ray. And after a while, you just kind of, you know, hone your focus and kind of... Yes. But you know, it's very complicated to talk about it. I'm talking about it for minutes at a time. It comes down to the fact that I want to be excited about cinema and I don't want to feel strain. It happens every now and again that something I beforehand didn't really want to test actually surprised me, but I don't take that chance very often on my own. I'm probably the same as you, that with people I could probably give movies a chance, because you kind of you throw away that devil on your shoulder, if you will, that says it's gonna suck, you can do something else, you know, watch something that is comfort fodder that you like, you know, oh, that sounds good. But with people, you're neutral to an extent, I guess. You give something a chance. So.
Yeah. Things that wouldn't normally be on your radar, or you see and go, oh, there's that. And then you kind of eventually, just because it's down to, you know, not persuasion or anything, but just down to different circumstances. It's a whole different ball game when you kind of watch things on your own back, rather than kind of having them as a group experience. And I don't know about you, Percy Ken, but for me, it's getting older. You know, say old, I mean, you know, 22, but
Jesus Christ. But I mean, you're a fucking kid.
But from that, I mean, I think. It's kind of now. I think now. I mean, just a whole another fucking topic. Just I think young people in general have got it a lot more easier these days with seeking out certain films. I think it's easier to become. You know, it's probably easier for film fans in general these days. I think it. You know, for you, Ken, I feel it. Is this how you feel? Because this is how I feel. I feel it. It happens less. Falling in love with directors or actors, or, you know, happens less than it did early on in your kind of film love. It does happen, but it seems to happen less than when you were kind of younger, initially getting into it all. Like you said with Lucia Fortune, that's kind of a later thing for you. It does happen. You will fall into love. You fall in love with stuff later down the line, but it seems to be that a lot of your loves were kind of initially in your phase of kind of getting into it.
Yeah, I do recognize that, because, you know, it's to be really sort of deep and maybe pretentious about it, when we're talking about when we were younger, when we were growing up. You know, when you're growing up, everything is new, and then when you start to become an adult, everything kind of evens out a little bit. Everything is not as fresh anymore. There's a great Jerry Seinfeld bit where he talks about kids versus adults, and it's literally that in the vocabulary as well. You grow up, you know, guys, wait up, I want to stay up. But the adults are the opposite, you know, calm down, you know,
I wanna go to bed.
Sit down, you are grounded.
But
it doesn't mean, as yours are hinting at, that there's no that there's a lack of excitement. You know, I couldn't be. I'm super happy in the place I am right now. Making discoveries and finding the directors and actresses and actors that I am finding. You know, I just have a harder time approaching much of the new releases, even from Hong Kong. I mean, I was almost about to watch a Detective D the other night. It's on Netflix. So,
nice.
I love Choi Hawk, but God damn it, not tonight anyway. I don't feel it tonight. You know what I mean? But it helps, though, in a way. It definitely helps, and it sounds like this is a big advert for Netflix, but having stuff on demand helps me personally to a little bit anyway to try out stuff, you know, to just scroll through movies. I'll try that on. I haven't done it so much with Asian cinema, I gotta admit too, but you know, with TV and certain movies, you know, western horror movies, having stuff on demand, I think, is a big key for me right now to try out more stuff. I'm probably in a transition phase now that stuff is finally coming to a country like ours. You know, we haven't had Netflix more than, at the time of recording, like 2 or 3 weeks. So we haven't had any streaming service akin to it we've had it on our computers and what have you, but not on devices and stuff like that. And that is a big key. I can watch movies on my computer and hook it up to the TV and what have you, but having stuff available on your in your TVs, on your Blu-ray players,
there's people in the TV.
Yeah, actual people in the TV, Flintstone style.
Oh no, I don't want to get dressed in front of the TV.
but you know, TVs are hooked up to. You can hook them up to the internet, and therefore you can download apps to your television. But I have mine in my PlayStation 3, and that's just freedom, great freedom to have. So you know,
Ken, if we don't get any kind of free shit from Sony, Netflix,
what kind of TV do you own, Tom? Well, I own, and its model is called, I'm looking to get a new model.
But, to get a slight upgrade.
But I don't know how you feel about streaming in general. Do you think that's do you still like to buy stuff, or do you think streaming plays a big part for you in terms of actually watching more movies?
It's the future, man, isn't it? Really, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the future. That's how it's going. Your physical media in general is not dead but dying.
Yep.
And I think, you know, a lot of things that, you know, just things in general. Like, I mean, I think Blu-ray will always be a big market because of what it offers, and it's still quite a collector's market. On the other hand, you have stuff like CDs, which just, it seems to be just a completely just dead area now. You know, it's only kind of a small amount of people that still, you know, buy CD. You have stuff like, you know, as you say, with the streaming, we can stream movies, we can get video games, we can get loads of shit just streamed through, or purchase things at a click of a button through the PS3 or through the service that it offers. That I find myself streaming. Streaming and things, you know, downloading and things like that a lot more than I would buy in physical media now. It's just a different game, and I feel, I mean, some shit like I think you and me had said this before, like, or I said to you before, that it's insane sometimes that I'll be, you know, maybe before, kind of, for me it's Love Film in the UK that I use, and before that I'd think, oh fuck, I'm never gonna see that film ever. Like, it's on an out of print DVD from the US, or it's on an out of print fucking VHS somewhere. It just seems like it's untouchable. Within the last couple of weeks, of just you know, I had Love Film for a few years now, but the last couple of weeks, there's been stuff that comes on in HD to stream that hasn't even got a DVD release in the UK. And that's a big, you know, that's a big, big player. That's a big factor. That when that drops for me and I see that that's on there, I'm like, fuck, man. I still get excited. I still get really excited about film and cinema and watching it. And I'm like, shit, man, I'm really excited to see this. Like, this is something I've been wanting to watch for ages. And now it's like there at the touch. You know, at my fingertips. And yeah, I'm the same. Like, I prefer watching stuff through a TV rather than the computer. But it's so easy to hook your laptop up to TV or the service, run the service through your TV, through a games console, that there's no excuse now, really. And I think it's almost sad that physical media is dying, but in some ways it's just endless opportunities and opportunities with disregard to what country you're in and where your location is in the world, which is great. Because, you know, fuck region codes and fuck stuff like that. Because for me, the only sense I see in that is obviously with newer film releases and they wanted to release it in different parts of the globe at different times. Yeah. Okay, I understand that. But older films, like, nah, fuck you. Like, what's the point? I just don't lock in Blu-rays and DVD. I just never really understood it in my head, really. I think if you live in some part of the world, why the hell should you not be able to watch that film in your country?
If you're able to pay for it, then I fairly agree. If you're a paying customer, then you should be able to.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, going back to Netflix, that's what people didn't realize at the launch here, that Netflix won't contain the newest stuff. Netflix has not been about, you know, as soon as Avengers hits DVD and Blu-ray, it will be on Netflix. No, it won't. It eventually possibly will. But what you also realize after using for a while, there's no Star Wars on Netflix. There's no Lord of the Rings on Netflix. There's no Harry Potter on Netflix. And I don't think it ever, maybe in 5-10 years, possibly. But I'm convinced that their thinking is that we got to sell this. And therefore, we can't release rights to a cheap streaming service when we want to sell discs. So that's why you're not getting the big players initially anyway on Netflix or Hulu or what have you. So and I'm still I still like buying every now and again, but I'll tell you, Tom, I don't think I bought even 10 DVDs this year. Number one, because I have so many things. Number two, I get a lot of stuff in via trading, you know, old Laserdiscs and Hong Kong Laserdiscs and what have you. Yeah, and now we have streaming, you know what I mean? And so it's not a replacement for disc media, but it's definitely the balance that appeals to me right now. Occasional purchase, trading, and now getting even the Asian stuff, new or not, getting some Asian stuff on VOD. So.
And it's just, it is so quick to kind of you know rip, like, you know, music and film, and it just, you know, it almost seems, you know, superfluous to even own physical media anymore. It's crazy, and I think but it's good in some ways because people are striving and companies are striving to make their physical media even better and offer you things with it. So we're getting that advantage, like, you know, we're getting cool packaging and we're getting things of that nature. Yeah. But
I mean, those are the actual CD releases I bought have had cool packaging and limited editions and extra discs and what have you, but just buying a plain old CD in a jewel case nowadays, I'm kind of childish that way, you know. I'm a kid that way, that I want some cool packaging with it, otherwise I could just buy it on iTunes and that'll be fine.
Very true.
Downloading music, not really a big fan of it. I'm a big fan of testing music, that's why I like Spotify. But you know, if you like something, especially if it's independent, like a lot of the bands that I listen to nowadays are independent, if you can't afford it, go buy a CD, support the band and what have you.
CD's still the best quality. That's the one thing I think that's stopping kind of iTunes and that, you know, Amazon downloads from ruling the world at the moment, is CD's still offer better quality.
Yeah.
So I think when it catches up, I think CD's will completely be dead. And I mean, you know, it's sad, but you know, I think that's just the way, you know, of the future now. I mean, and to really kind of sum up, you know, for me, my Asian cinema beginnings was kind of anime and kaiju films, and it was anything I could get my hands on, no matter how shitty or really inappropriate to how old I was at the time. You know, I really should have been seeing some of this shit, but I managed to do it through.
At what age did you see Urotsukidoji? Legend of Dorothy? Were you like 12 years old?
I think it was 13, 12, 13, yeah. I don't think I've even sprouted my first pubic hair before I watched that game, which is not good. But yeah, and then through foolish parents of friends and foolish, you know, relatives of mine, I managed to kind of, you know, get my hands on stuff I really shouldn't be watching. But it made me a better person, I think. I'm not a psycho or murderer or something, but I think it all helped in kind of me becoming a film fan. I mean,
yep.
I dread to think how many splatter and tits late 80s, kind of early 90s, around that time, kind of anime OVAs I saw at that point, like some of the shit I watched. But it was all part of my upbringing and a knowledge of the genre. It was also a time of not caring whether it was dubbed full screen, you know, one 20-minute part of a 60-episode series, because it was the innocence of not really being plugged into the internet at that point also. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, to kind of sum it up, the internet and digital media has played a massive part in kind of answering this question. Availability, choice, range, you know, it's all played a massive hand in, you know, I feel all our kind of tastes changing and forming, and it's maybe, I mean, you know, you could argue it's maybe made us worse for it in some ways, because as we almost have too much knowledge now, because it makes us kind of form opinions of genre, directors, etc., before we've even dipped our toe into their work.
True,
but when before, we'd kind of leap in without even, you know, willy-nilly, without even a hint of what we were getting in for.
Jingle Ma seems exciting. I'm going to try his movies.
Check out this guy. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I think there's definitely more positives to it, because we're getting the range, we're getting choice, we're getting, you know, just so much shit at our fingertips. It's almost kind of overwhelming. Like, you know, right now, at this very second, without even moving from where I am now, you know, fully nude on the heater with the petrol in my hand, etc.
I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, you forgot where I was, yeah. I'm sweating a bit now. You know, at the computer now, I could probably access, how many films with the touch of a button.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a list of shit a mile long that for me to kind of, you know, get through and sit through. It's almost overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, that definitely outweighs, you know, the bad of it, you know, knowledge. But, you know, the knowledge in maybe that's possibly too much knowledge, but even then it's still giving us so much kind of, you know, so much kind of knowledge of genres we wouldn't even kind of, you know, back 10, 15 years ago that we'd know nothing about, that we wouldn't even know. Like, I mean, even Shukin, like doing the kind of the Taiwan stuff, and it's like 10, 15 years ago, I bet you personally said, I hadn't even heard of any of that shit.
No.
It's crazy, and that's all to do with the internet, and it's all to do with physical media. So I think, yeah, you know, to sum up, I think it's more good than bad. There are bad parts, you know, as I said, but I think it's more... we're living in a better age. We're living in a better age, and
I think being able to watch movies. I don't yearn for that era where I could only see a select amount of movies because I couldn't afford it. It was great the amount I could get my hands on. They were big experiences, and The Hunt was always fun. The Hunt is fun to an extent, but yeah, I don't really see it as a disadvantage that I don't need to hunt anymore. Why should you?
You know, why should you? Well, you know, nostalgia aside, we're just living in a completely better age now than we were kind of 10, 15 years ago for film fans.
Absolutely. Alrighty. We have another topic, maybe as extensive or not as extensive. So take it away, Tom. What's the second thing you're angry about?
Okay. Well, always angry.
Angry Tom. On fire.
Paint myself green. The second topic is do we feel... I mean, this is probably kind of linked to the question of like just so much information, but do we feel in any way certain performers or directors, and I'm talking about kind of, you know, Asian cinema, get too much attention in the West, or too much attention from fans in general, when obviously there's other kind of performers and writers and directors, and you know, there's a hole on the side of that. Do we feel like there's few guys that are getting too much attention, when, you know, to a point of kind of frustration, because we want these guys that we're a fan of to get more attention?
You know what, it's a struggle that's kind of worth fighting and not fighting at the same time. I mean, it's you always have your favorite stars and directors and movies and musicians, even you want them to shine as brightly as you know, as anything that is successful out there, you want to, you want everybody to love them intensely. But the nature of the business is this: trends, hype, and acclaim and timing play such a part of breaking through. You know, you have to kind of be at the right place at the right time. Whether or not you have a quality product to present, that's not really, you know, the point in terms of getting a breakthrough. A lot of shit gets breakthrough out there, musical movies or what have you. So, you know, that I don't think too much about it. It can make me sad that some of the best creators in cinema and music don't get the spotlight they deserve, but
yep.
Some of them do carry on. You know, they are creating masterful stuff on their own terms, independently, underground, and perhaps that will pay off one day. But and I always admire that. I take something away from that as a creative person. So I rarely get angry about the fact that there's too much exposure on whatever, you know, despite me often calling out Benny Chan or Jingle Ma or Wong Kar Wai. I mean, it's both serious but done in the name of fun. As you know, I don't really go into places where there's negative energy and anger to be had. You know, I don't really like it. You know, Benny Chan was a better director than he is today. I don't like his stuff today. I liked his stuff before. Jingle Ma, I don't really like at all. Wong Kar Wai, I like. I've not seen everybody, all of his movies, but I don't like, for instance, Chungking Express. I don't get it. Then again, I don't get why more people aren't talking about Ashes of Time, which is a brilliant movie. So you know what I mean? I can even be mad about that. Why don't they love Wong Kar Wai that much? So you know, it's that. But you know, Tom, I think all of that above is hard to change unless you really go out of your way to champion something, you know, have a campaign going on. you know, the business is what it is, and it's, you know, to answer your question, do I feel certain performers get too much attention? Oh, yes, of course.
Yep.
I want a lot of other stuff to get more attention. I want Taiwanese cinema to you know, be fully archived and available and remastered and put out on DVD and what have you. But, you know, some things you realize are destined to be kind of slightly underground, not exposed to as much audience as you would like. But then again, we are talking also specialized genres, not mainstream genres. So not everything is destined for a major breakthrough. So, no. So I mean, it's a dual thing, I guess. But I don't get frustrated or sad about it, really. I just have a little bit of fun about the fact that why can't you people realize that all of that sucks? but you know, look at me, look at the crap that I watch. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oops. Do you?
You're fired.
Do you anyway think some parts of like, you know, cinema or something? Do you feel it takes away from it being mainstream? An interesting question that I put to you. Do you feel like some things that you like that's kind of quite, you know, not well known? Do you prefer it not to be well known, or do you want it to have as much exposure, massive exposure?
Well, it depends on the product.
Does it make a difference in your viewing or your love?
Only if the product all of a sudden becomes worse, and when you really. When it becomes transparent that this is full of compromises just to be retuned to fit a general audience. If you see that, then of course I would rather have it to be less known and be filled with more creative freedom and on more of that artist's talking about both movies and music, both on that artist's terms. You know what I mean? So I don't want, and there are examples of that happening where the creative integrity is intact, thankfully, but it's not a given at all times. You kind of, you know, it's a kind of selling yourself to the devil kind of scenario at the worst of times.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's true. I mean, I think if things do become mainstream, they should be enjoyed for, you know, the quality. They should be enjoyed for the quality and seen for the quality that they represent, and the quality should be the same whether it's an underground product or whether it's kind of a very mainstream product, and I think it shouldn't change. And saying that leads into, you know, someone like, you know, Jackie Chan, who, you know, is a legend, and you know, we all love him and it's amazing what he does, but do we really feel he's kind of a one-man perception of what Hong Kong cinema is to Western audience? And the fact that makes it even more frustrating is the fact that you say to, you know, Western audience, name Jackie Chan films, they'd say Rush Hour, Shanghai Noon, you know, Spy Next Door, you know, The Tuxedo. Is it the more frustrating because of the fact that he's not taken as for what he's done that we all love him for, and he's taken for what kind of Western audience perceive as, you know, his films, when really they're kind of watered down versions of older films and what he used to do.
I mean, that should frustrate you, but I wonder if when negotiating with whoever you are negotiating with, I wonder if there is any room to kind of say that, hey, this was a smash for me, can we bring out something like Miracles, maybe we can release that on DVD. I don't know how that kind of jargon or discussion works, if he's ever been kind of able to state his own terms, or just kind of try and be a commercial star and be something be a creative person on his own endeavors back home or what have you. But I don't know. I'm sure it's not easy to get your demands through. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we really kind of only know, you know, we only see it as for what it is, which is there's a lot of shitty films being made, and we really don't know, you know, the backstory as to, you know, maybe Jackie's making them to, you know, make money to finance, I don't know, all his films on the newest video format, which is going to be a disc that you put in your head and then watching, right? I don't know. You know, he might be working on that. I don't know. We don't know.
Why is he working on that?
Because he likes to do things of that nature.
Fuck you, scientist. I'm Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan is a scientist, okay? You might not know that, but I do, all right? You know, yes, I mean, obviously there's another... There's people. I sometimes feel, getting down nitty gritty, it's almost like not really the work that it's popular. The quality of the work is why the thing's popular. But I feel like it's sometimes time and place.
Yes.
Because for me personally, I think Park Chan-wook, Korean director, I'm sure you all know. Some of you love, some of you hate. I feel Old Boy is a good film, but was really down to luck that it caught on. Mm-hmm. And I really feel it could have been any film at that moment in time. It just somehow managed to strike a chord with viewers and international viewers, because they were craving for something a little different at the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. And it was a figurehead for the so-called Asian extreme, when, you know, Tartan and their kind of DVD releases were at the height of their popularity. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I feel it is just a key of, like, certain moments, someone will kind of squeeze through, something will squeeze through, and it's really the linchpin for this massive explosion of in its wake of films similarly to it. But often or not, I feel like that film itself that created this kind of explosion, the quality of itself could be lacking, but because it came out in a certain time and place and it was of a certain kind of type of film, it really gets a lot of kind of praise heaped on it.
Yeah, I guess that was kind of my point at the beginning. There is a timing issue here, and you wish that when you open that vortex, if you will, that a lot of more stuff will be able to slip through. And to an extent, backlogs of certain directors get a chance, but...
There was a lot of horseshit as well.
But you know, it's not a given that, okay, we've been waiting to lift up all of our other 5-star stuff, now we get a chance to do that. It's not a given that that would be the natural order of things, unfortunately. For instance, you know, what happened after Old Boy, what should have happened after Old Boy, in my naive mind, is that JSA would have been as big, and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance would have been as big, because they are better movies, in my opinion, than Old Boy.
Agree.
But I don't think too much about it. I just feel like at least I you know, sometimes you have to be selfish about these things. At least I have them. At least I know of them. Maybe I can spread the word a little bit about them. But at least, you know, they're not buried, which is always like the point to kind of come back to, even though it's not pure comfort at all times. But it's, you know, totally unrelated, but we spoke of the Inbetweeners earlier. There's a crappy US remake. At least the British remake is not buried, you know, forever. And no one knows about it. So, yeah. So it's kind of, you know, it's a big fight. Sometimes it just have to kind of close it all and see it from inside your bubble, kind of like. I have it, a lot of people have it, a lot more people have it as well. At least there's some joy out there, even though it deserves more.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, if it opens up the door for you know, greatness and for people to kind of leap into a genre, that an era, a type of filmmaking, I think it's good. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I do kind of look at things and feel like, you know, that's really getting praised. You know, I mean, arguably, kind of, you know, Battle Royale could arguably. I feel it still remains a really, you know, good film, but again, mm-hmm. it's almost worshipped at the altar by fans who saw it around the same period kind of Old Boy was making the rounds, and it's held up more so to it being different and shocking, and there's, you know, Japanese dudes, like, kids are getting killed, shit, what's going down, so much more, like, that kind of takes away from the fact that it's genuinely just, it's just a good film. You know, it's a great film.
It's kind of inevitable, you know, hype and acclaim, and when the machine starts, you know, and the wheel starts spinning, it's kind of inevitable sometimes that kind of development, you know, and word and, you know, rumor happens. You know, sometimes the things that you want to be focused on aren't always going to be focused on. It's kind of the natural order of things as well, that that hype and acclaim makes the talk come off that way, the talk of a movie, the talk back. It's hard sometimes to steer it in the direction that it should be steered into, because if something has a rep, then it has a rep on the surface sometimes, you know what I mean? And we are talking about things that are slightly below the surface, that it's a good film as well.
it's a tricky thing.
I probably invested myself emotionally into it again maybe 5-10 years ago, to an extent where I was angry. Remakes, for instance, annoyed the hell out of me once. I don't, they do, but I don't spend any time on it. Remakes of Asian movies, remakes of horror movies, what have you. At least, you know, I can see that they are sometimes bad remakes, and I know I still have the old movie, and therefore I know that they... What am I saying here?
That's not going to go away.
You know, no, absolutely not. It's business. It's business. Yeah. And so I'm, who am I to stand in the way of business? You would like to change trends and change perception, but you know, business is business, and as long as they don't take away, you know, the stuff we are focusing on, the stuff we like, the things we are using to have a creative outlet via, as long as that doesn't go away, then I guess something is still all right, after all is said and done.
Very good point, and it will always.
I mean, Jingle Ma won't go away. I realise that. No, so I can just stop.
Unless you actually put out a hit on him, Ken, I think he's going to stay around. All right, but yeah, no, it's a very good point. It's always going to happen. It's not going to stop. You know, tomorrow we're not going to kind of, you know, remakes aren't going to be made, and you know, just a topic on, you know, the amount of remakes and sequels and stuff that's getting made, and reboots could be a completely, you know, different topic in itself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I think I feel really, if it's going to bring light to the original work, I feel that's always a good thing. I feel like if it's going to get us, you know, maybe great kind of releases of the original work, or something to do with the original work, or, you know, just things around the original, I think that's always a good thing as well. But it's not always the case that someone is going to see a remake and is going to go and seek out the original film. So yeah, again, it's a double. It's not black and white, really, whether remakes are good or not, and whether they're worth it. They're going to make money, but yeah. They're always going to make money. Because there's always going to be people, like, even like us that are skeptical about remakes, you're going to see it, or you know, have an inkling to see it, or have a kind of, you know, curious, more, you know, morbid kind of curiosity to see it, just because it's a remake of, you know, a film you love.
Yeah, I'll tell you a good example of that. One of my favorite movies is The Hitcher.
Yes.
And I saw that remake. I knew for a fact that it can't live up to that level, but you know what? They might have their own vision and might have their own take on it. They didn't. It was absolutely trash. They changed around some things, not for the better, and it was just far, far from as effective. The thing with The Hitcher, though, is you can't make that movie today.
No.
I don't know if you're familiar
different
with
time.
The original.
Yeah,
because it's such a surreal movie where you kind of, hey, why is that happening? That doesn't make sense. At that time, and I still do, you just go with it. The lack of logic in that movie, it's almost supernatural, that movie. That was not present, essentially, at all in the remake, as far as I remember. But it was just, I didn't like it. New audiences might think it's cool, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to catch new audiences, and that's fine. You can't catch new audiences with even 10-year-old movies nowadays, it seems, because they're rebooting franchises very quickly nowadays. I mean, the Spider-Man franchise is a good example. It got rebooted super fast.
Really fast, yeah. That almost just goes to show the kind of just how, you know, in you know, film execs' perception is how quickly things get stale, and how quickly film franchises get stale, and how quickly they want to kind of.
I'm not saying it bad. I'm not seeing the new Spider-Man. I liked the first two in the Sam Raimi trilogy. So it might be good.
Don't get me started on Spider-Man, Ken.
Okay.
Well, that's another topic.
Okay.
But yeah. It just goes to show the younger audience now that films are playing to, that these guys are going to be, you know, getting into the 20s and 30s by the time the remake's going to come around. And it's always about that young audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of a, you know, it sounds weird, like, just like, you know, probably old man of me to say, but there's a very much a
remember,
cool,
listeners, he's 20.
A 22. It's very much a kind of a cool culture these days. Oh, have you seen, you know, oh, did you see that horror room? Oh, you seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Yeah, it was really good, yeah. Have you seen the original? What? Oh, what's that? No, that's old. What? How old is that? I'm not seeing that because it's old.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that because it's from the 70s. I'm not seeing that. I want that version of that story. I want it translated to today's time and period and today's aesthetic, or I can't watch it. Which is a startling, and I'm seeing it with a lot of people. I it's kind of shocking. I mean, I've got a lot of younger siblings and things and. Speaking to them about certain things, I don't know what to say, it's old. Like, it's like the people make remakes now to make money off the original franchise name, but also because they somehow want to translate older works that seem dated into, for a modern audience with a modern aesthetic, so people can kind of get into it, because people aren't interested in the older films. They want to, and that's a big thing that's happening, and it feels
they're doing that in Hong Kong too. There are a few Shaw Brothers remakes slated for release.
Yeah.
Mainly, it's taking its cues, I think, from The Flying Guillotine. Is it Andrew Lau who's on board now directing the Guillotines?
Yeah, I've heard this year.
Which might be a very loose remake of the Chen Kwan-tai Shaw Brothers movie called The Flying Guillotine, which was not a very good movie, to be honest. I didn't really like it. So,
just in terms of, you know, aesthetic and
visuals.
Yeah,
it's pretty decent, what have you. But you're not going to get a young audience in Hong Kong buying. You didn't get them buying the Shaw Brothers DVD when it came out. Mm-hmm. So they're doing that in Hong Kong as well, trying to catch a new audience with the remake tinge. It's not. And I don't know if they're going to be very open about the fact that it is a remake.
It's a remake.
And you don't really. Sometimes you don't really need to be. So
No. I mean, is it what is it, Ken? You know, we just different. We just weird kids. Like, are we just? You know, is that what it is now? Like. You know, I never had a problem with that, and I never had a problem not seeing anything because it was old, or preferring to see something new because of the fact that it was new and it was more kind of to my level of what modern was and fitting kind of my cultural surroundings. I always felt like if it's an original work, I'll see the original work, whether it, you know, I've heard a recent conversation I had, you know, with just with my little sister. She doesn't want to watch Night of the Living Dead because it's in black and white.
Mm.
And that's never, you know, that's never put me off. But it just feels like, is it just a different time we're living in, or is it just the fact that the way we are, like our kind of personalities? I just don't understand where this kind of, this whole kind of cool perception has come from. But it seems to be quite, I don't know, maybe it's always been like that. Maybe we're just the nerds that likes older stuff and can see the glory in older stuff. But
yeah, I mean,
it seems to be
a very
unnerving cultural phenomenon now. Is that
yeah,
people want,
I think it's true. It's a difficult question to answer because, again, I'm from inside of my bubble. I don't get the outside perspective. But there was a good perspective on this in the documentary I saw recently, The People versus George Lucas, which was a good balanced documentary about how great it is and how dissatisfied some fans are. About the changes in the Star Wars trilogy and when the episode 1, 2, 3 came out, the Phantom Menace and what have you, and they kind of at the end of the documentary stopped to think, you know, we were kids back then, we liked that stuff a whole lot, we ourselves have kids now and they like the likes of Jar Jar Binks and they like the way he talks, they are dazzled by that new entertainment, and we are kind of not. So I think that was a very good point about that documentary, that it was not all a slam against George Lucas. There are some criticisms that should be directed towards him, but they were kind of realizing that I don't think we have a say in certain areas either. But it's hard not to be kind of frustrated when you know something is awesome. You know, Night of the Living Dead, you know, 1968, man.
Yep.
Black and white, man.
Yeah.
And 16mm, and, you know, it doesn't have a Linkin Park soundtrack on it. Yeah, man. You know, of course you're going to get a blank stare back. I don't know how you approach that, like, by saying, yeah, man.
I said, you're an idiot. Sort yourself out.
May I ask how little your little sister is in this case, 12, 15, 18?
Yeah, about the same age as, about the same age that I was when I probably first saw it.
So you're trying to get a 12-year-old to watch Night of the Living Dead?
Yes. Is that
cool?
Should I have said that?
Cool, but no, I don't really care. It's like, talk about a challenge.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, you're My Little Ponies or Care Bears, go to the side. I don't know what kids.
Fuck those horses.
Yeah. Look at this. Time. Zombies, man. It's scary. Watch
Zombie
it.
Zombie time, baby. But yeah, that was just, you know, a good example of, you know, an example that made me think again, like just the way it is. But yeah, as you say, I don't think we really have do we have a right to really talk about it? Do we have a right to comment on it? All I can say is that's from my perspective,
and it makes
me somewhat sad, really, the fact that that's how it is. But I just hope that, you know, when I have kids, I'll probably start them really young to not have these kind of, you know, barricades.
I'm making my 1-year-old watch Night of the Living Dead. Shut up!
Yes!
On Laserdisc!
Honestly, this is okay for you now. When you get to 12, it'll all be about Legend of the Other Fiends.
Uncut.
Uncut. Because it'll be available streaming then.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
It will. I mean, all I can say is that hopefully when I have a little one, it'll be from the very get-go. Don't have this, you know, barricade put around you towards, you know, older things, because it's just a way of almost destroying culture. I know we're getting very deep here as well, you know, almost kind of forgetting our cultural roots and forgetting that all this stuff ever happened, which is sad as well. So I just hope that there'll always be people that'll keep it alive, and hopefully you, me, Ken will always, you know, pass that down a lot of other
I'll
people.
Be here when I'm 60 years old
watching the colorized HD double remake of Night of the Living Dead.
Were you aware they did like there's a 2006 Night of the Living Dead?
Yes.
I didn't realize that existed until looking at Sid Haig's filmography the other day. Holy shit, where did that come from?
Have you seen the 20th anniversary, 30th anniversary, which adds all the kind of the scenes in?
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
Fuck, man.
That was a misstep and a half.
That was a massive misstep. Yeah, that was a fucking fail. But that was the first version I saw, I think.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I'm trying to think because I think that was the first version I saw of it, yeah. And then I obviously realised... Yeah, because I think that I had a DVD with all the versions on, or the, mm-hmm. I think it was had the colourised version as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I sat down for some reason and watched 35 hours, but thinking that was going to be the best version.
It's a seamless. That zombie looks exactly the same as the zombie in the old movie.
At all. That was fucking terrible.
It's good to know, Tom, that you are not coming at... In actual fact, you know, these various topics and what have you, we have a sense of anger, maybe a sense of sadness, but
yes.
Also a sense of that we can't really do.
We can't do it.
A lot about it. We can try a little bit. You tried with Night of the Living Dead with a 12-year-old. I would have said like you were insane if you tried, but good on you to try. But we have pretty much all the stuff we like still available to us. It's not been snatched away from us. No. And I guess if we still have the experience, that's good. If we can share that experience every now and again with some new people not of our generation or age, then that can be cool if that works. But don't pinch, you know, your energy on it, you know.
No.
All of your energy on it. So.
It's not something that you know, kind of should eat you up, and you should, you know, kind of worry about it all the time and be something that you absolutely strive against it. But, you know, it's just something that happens, and unfortunately it's a sad thing, but that's not going to, you know, change our lives or type of film fans we are, which is, you know, we can always comment on these things, but as long as, you know, they're not affecting us, you know, as if shit getting taken away from us, then all we can do is kind of sit from the sidelines and, yeah, be a bit sad about it, but really it's going to happen.
Mm. I have a gun to my head 24/7. Just so you know.
Sellotape.
That's how sad I am about the state of affairs.
Got cyanide pill in me back.
That's why I don't invite people over here. It'll just be a messy sight immediately.
Just put like a shopping bag over here.
Yeah.
I've just got a really nasty spot, guys. Honestly, massive pimple. That's what the whole reason for the shopping bag on my head, honestly. There's not a gun here. That gun-shaped object protruding out, that's not a gun. That's honestly a spot. Yeah, honestly, it looks like a gun.
You know me all too well, Tom. Anyway, good little chat as always, Tom.
Yep.
So cheers for that. I know this is always well received, and I enjoy this. It's not too much work. That's why I enjoy it a whole lot. So
very casual Sunday afternoon, Kenny.
Absolutely. Okay, so we are done for this Podcast on Fire, and the brief contact information goes as follows. The Podcast on Fire network is located at podcastonfire.com. Email for feedback, and again, be kind to Stu. He's the one who's reading these
no
things.
Death threats.
No death threats. podcastonfire@googlemail.com. We produce bonus episodes on the website. They are located in the category, so if you scroll down to the right-hand side, you will see that category. There are members-only bonus stuff on the old forum. I promise to take that stuff and put it on the website in some shape or form. So look out for that. There will be an update on that sometime. And that will happen on facebook.com/POF network. And you can follow the link on that page to our discussion group as well. And that is also reachable by typing in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search box. And follow Stu's exploits on twitter.com/podcastonfire, as well as updates from the Podcast on Fire Network. I do my writing over at sogoodreviews.com, and I also produce little video reviews of my content over at sleazykvideo.com, and talk about all of that on twitter.com/sogoodreviews. We are on iTunes. Almost all of the shows are separated into their individual feeds, so if you want to subscribe to us, you can do it that way. And if you like the show, we will very much appreciate a rating or a comment. So thank you for supporting us, regardless if you leave a rating or a comment. And you can also stream us on Stitcher. Speaking of streaming, that is a good streaming service. So it runs through my life, you know.
It is a plug.
So, but it runs through my life, streaming. So, and it goes for podcasts as well. So Stitcher.com, you can follow the link in the show post. You'll get the Podcast on Fire current show page, and there is also an app available for your iPhone, iPad, or Android, and that is a free app. And once you're in Stitcher, once you're in Stitcher and have it downloaded, type in Podcast on Fire Network, and you can add each show individually. And in your best robotic voice, Tom, what is there to say about your content at vcinemashow.com?
Click to vcinemashow.com. Type Tom Kent Williams in the search bar, but not after reading everything else on the site beforehand. Put me to the bottom of the of the queue.
Nah, stop it.
There's always a slow and very much like this Sunday, slow and nice pace to more reviews on VCM Show, but just check out the site anyway because it's awesome.
Anyway, thank you everybody for listening to Podcast on Fire this time around, and this is Kenny B signing off, and with me was light your match now, Tom. That is Tom KW going off in the air. Theater of the mind.
We'll be recording next time from the sun. I don't know how I'm going to get a laptop on there, but we'll see.
Yeah, there is always a few weeks in between recordings nowadays, so you'll have time.
The time. Yeah. I have the time.
Anyway, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys. Bye.